From Washington, D.C., this is On the Ground. While corporate media continues to spread false stories about mass rape of Israeli women by Hamas last October 7th, documented rapes of Palestinian women, men, and children are ignored. We speak to investigative journalist Arun Gupta.
This great rape hoax has been used as cover for genocide. It's been used to erase the sexual and gender violence against Palestinian women, right, to keep Israeli society in this heightened state of aggression and just rage and complete hysteria.
And according to a new report by the UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights in Occupied Palestine, the threshold indicating Israel's commission of genocide is met.
For over 76 years, this process has oppressed the Palestinians as a people in every way imaginable, crushing their inalienable right to self-determination demographically, economically, territorially, culturally, and politically.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org, voices of resistance from the nation's capital. I'm Esther Averam. First, our headlines. 4 days after the UN Security Council approved a resolution on March 25th ordering an immediate ceasefire in Gaza, Israel continues its bombing, systematic murders, and the blocking of food to the seaside enclave, where more than 44,000 people have been killed or are missing and presumed dead. Nearly 75,000 people are wounded, and hundreds of thousands are starving. On Thursday, March 28th, the International Court of Justice issued a new order in the genocide case against Israel, directing the apartheid state to stop blocking trucks carrying food and other humanitarian aid to Gaza, where at least 31 people, including 27 children, have died of starvation and dehydration. In an Instagram post with at least 250,000 views, Palestinian writer and digital creator Mo Hamza expressed exasperation with corporate media's failure to cover Israel's continued flouting of international law.
My issue here is with all you pathetic news networks who find that the news of a rogue pariah nation going completely against international law and direct orders from the UN to continue a genocide, thus threatening our world order, is not news to you. How is that not dominating every single news outlet? Even after this UN order, the self-proclaimed only democracy of the Middle East is continuing their full-scale authoritarian holocaust, and you still say nothing.
Hamza compared the disinvestment by the U.S. into its own infrastructure at home, which might have prevented the deadly bridge collapse in his hometown of Baltimore, to the continued funneling of billions to Israel. Russian investigators announced Thursday that they have established a link between Ukrainian nationalists and perpetrators of the March 22nd terrorist attack at a concert hall near Moscow that killed 140 people. Investigators said they have proof that the assailants received substantial amounts of cryptocurrency from a source in Ukraine, and that despite claims that the suspects are only connected to the terrorist group ISIS-K, investigators believe that the plot was hatched by another agency, possibly a Ukrainian intelligence agency. Those maimed and murdered in the attack have not drawn the same level of empathy accorded to victims of terrorist attacks in other European countries, including France and London. Instead, mainstream news outlets have covered the attack as a failure of Russian intelligence agencies and a failure of Vladimir Putin. Within an hour of the attack, U.S. officials declared that Ukraine had nothing to do with it. In the U.S., voting maps, already judged to be gerrymandered to dilute the voting power of African Americans, will be used in South Carolina and Florida for the 2024 elections. On March 28th, a federal panel decided to let South Carolina use a racially gerrymandered map because the U.S. Supreme Court is delayed in deciding on the case. In Florida, a federal three-judge panel has ruled that state's congressional map may remain after it was challenged by former Representative Al Lawson and the watchdog group Common Cause. Lawson is a Black Democrat whose district was dismantled when the map was created in 2022. And finally, in culture and media, thousands across the globe are expected to march on Saturday, March 30th for Land Day to support Palestinian resistance against settler colonialism and for the right of return for all Palestinians to their sovereign homeland. In D.C., the March 30th rally will be at DuPont Circle at 4 p.m. Get more information at shutitdownforpalestine.org or at answercoalition.org. And those are our headlines and happenings. Stay with us. God don't like ugly, I ain't one to judge. Whole lot of gold, Cuban with a ton. Say I kept it solid when it's all said and done. All I know is keep going, run, better run. Mama told me never fold, run, better run. Like Jenny told Forrest Gump, run, better run. The race for freedom ain't won, run, better run. Had to make it out the red clay, run, better run. The west side of Atlanta, yeah, that's where I'm from. This is On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org, voices of resistance from the nation's capital. I'm Esther Averam. Joining me now is Arun Gupta, an investigative reporter and author. His article, Claims of Mass Rape by Hamas Unravel Upon Investigation, was published by Yes Magazine. And on February 27, 2024, The Intercept published his article, American Media Keeps Citing Zaka, Though Its October 7 Atrocity Stories Are Discredited in Israel. Welcome to On the Ground, Arun.
Thanks for having me on, Esther.
And thank you. I know that you are in an ungodly time zone right now. And so I appreciate you making the time to stay up and talk to me.
And no problem. The news never sleeps.
That's right. Well, this is a very difficult, enraging topic to deal with. One for me that touches to the core of what it is to live with the legacy of enslavement, colonialism, under any of these like white settler colonial projects throughout the world that have used mass rape as a weapon against enslaved, colonized, and indigenous women, at the same time that they fabricate stories about the rape of white women to justify lynchings and other acts of savagery against Black, brown, indigenous people. And this has happened all over the world. So in reading your recent work, I know it's focused on how U.S. media has published hundreds of these articles lacking evidence, but parroting Israeli claims that Hamas carried out a systematic rape on October 7th. And this week, I know you mentioned in an interview with our friends at accuracy.org how the New York Times was forced to retract pieces of that widely criticized article. I think it was titled Screams Without Words, in which they quoted an Israeli forces paramedic saying that he had witnessed rape or he had seen these rapes that day. And so we know that that claim and many of these other claims have been discredited. At the same time, starting last month, there were many credible documented claims about, I think you mentioned, two UN special rapporteurs and four UN experts said that they were distressed at reports that, quote, Palestinian women and girls in detention have been subjected to multiple forms of sexual assault, such as being stripped naked and searched by male Israeli army officers. At least two female Palestinian detainees were reportedly raped, while others were reportedly threatened with rape and sexual violence. And I'm actually forced, like most of us, to get most of my news about Palestine from social media. And in this current ongoing genocide at Al-Shifa Hospital, there were reports of a woman being raped while the men around her in her family or her cohort of friends were forced to keep their eyes open. And if they were told if they shut their eyes, they would be shot. So I know that these things are separate from the reports coming from the UN, but let's just start there. Let's start with the documented cases and the witnesses that have come forward either to the UN or to the Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor released a report, including the testimony of four Palestinian women in Gaza who report being subject to sexual violence, torture, and strip searches, rape threats.
Yeah, so I think that's a great way to, I think, get into this. So I think it's important to contrast what we have here. And there are these different terms, right? There's gender-based violence, which is different than sexual violence. And sexual violence includes rape, but there are other acts that can be sexual violence that are not rape. And so what I did is I looked in these two stories for Yes Magazine and The Intercept at Israeli claims that Hamas carried out this campaign of mass rape on October 7th. And there's some Israeli officials who say premeditated and systematic campaign. And basically, all those allegations have completely fallen apart. Now, in the last few days, there has been one completely credible story of an Israeli woman who was raped in captivity, weeks into captivity, but that's completely different than October 7th itself. And that's what everyone has seen. And there have been thousands of stories. And the thing about those, all of them, they lack photo and video evidence. There has been no good photo and video evidence, despite what you may have heard or you think that you've seen. There's zero forensic evidence, despite the fact that the Israelis admit they do have a lot of forensic evidence. And they also do say they have 60,000 photo and video files. Third, there's no corroborating witnesses to any of these claims. And fourth, and most important, there's no survivor testimony. Now, when it comes to the Palestinians, we have seen case after case, and I've been collecting videos of just absolutely distraught Palestinian women who talk about in Gaza the fact that they themselves, as part of their family, you know, that they were stripped naked. And so that's sexual violence, right? That they were stripped naked, they were paraded, they were degraded, and often it involves assassinations, extrajudicial executions of family members like husbands, sons, uncles. And then there's been three different reports, and you've cited two of them, one from the two UN special rapporteurs and the other experts, where they're documenting sexual violence, such as stripping women naked, putting them in cages, threatening them with rape. And they say there are two reported cases, but they don't offer any more details, unfortunately. In the case of these Palestinian women, they themselves are coming forward, right? So the Euromed report interviewed four women. They just quoted them by initials because Israel is actually assassinating people who come forward, right? They know where everyone is, right? So they're just quoting them by their initial. For obvious reasons, they want to be anonymous, but also, you know, they're helping to protect them. Then Al Jazeera, they got a hold of this UN Relief Work Agency report that has yet to be published. And, you know, they're the ones who are completely being attacked by the Israelis. This is all part of this Israeli-made famine, which is being used to carry out the next stage of the genocide in Gaza. And so UNRWA, completely reputable, above the board. So Israel is kidnapping. They're taking all these Palestinians hostage and taking them into Israel. And then they're releasing some of them. Over 1,000 detainees came back. And I think UNRWA interviewed slightly over 1,000 of them. And in this unpublished report that Al Jazeera got, they say that there's evidence of sexual violence, you know, stripping people, humiliation, degradation, torture. But they also say, and sorry, this is going to get a bit graphic, so content warning for your listeners, that there's also detainees are saying that Israelis are sticking electrified sticks up their rectum. So they're actually raping people with objects, right? That is rape, if you're using an object and inserting it into someone's sexual organ. And again, this is something we haven't heard at all in terms of the Israeli claims. These are all independent investigators, the UN rapporteurs, Euromed Human Rights Organization, this UNRWA report. This is what gives the Palestinian account great credibility. And so, you know, you hit the nail on the head in terms of your introduction, that what we are seeing in the media, who always, you know, corporate media have always parroted the Pentagon and its viewpoint, you know, Korean War, Vietnam War, the Central American Wars, the Persian Gulf War, the first Iraq War, Kosovo War, Sudan, the second Iraq War, Libya, Afghanistan, Somalia, on and on and on. Israel has also become very sophisticated at squashing even a hint of criticism. So what you get is a media that completely just acts as this giant pipeline for Israeli propaganda and disinformation. So the real story is not about Israeli women being raped. All those stories have fallen apart. That New York Times report, all the individual cases have basically fallen apart at this point, and they've admitted some of it, but they won't retract the story. The real story is the sexual and gender-based violence against Palestinian women and girls. So you have something like, I think, over 10,000 new orphans. There are, I think, thousands of women have become widowed and are now the head of households. I think it was 1,000 or 2,000, something like that. And this is all considered gender-based violence, but there's also systematic sexual violence in the fact that women's sanitation and their menstrual health has been completely devastated. There's something, I think, like 50,000 lactating women who can no longer breastfeed their infants. There's hundreds of birth complications every week. The pregnancy and prenatal care has been completely destroyed. It's worse than the
Having to give birth without a C-section without any anesthesia.
And they're being starved to death. And so they're not, the women aren't producing milk, which means that the infants are going to die. And a number of them have died right after being born. This is all considered sexual violence and gender-based violence. And it is utterly systematic. Whereas we can weigh like one Israeli woman who was sexually assaulted in captivity versus 1 million Palestinian women and girls. And, you know, I'm glad you brought up this history because, of course.
But before we do the history, though, I wanted to, while we were talking about these actual documented cases, because I think that we should add that there are cases that have nothing to do with Gaza. I've seen really disturbing video documented cases or testimony from women and girls being abducted from the West Bank and having these atrocities happen. And I know this is really, really kind of going way off the subject, and we can discard it if it's not relevant. But I saw a post, I think, by the journalist Dan Cohen, because the IDF or the IOF has, you know, we call it, Israel is made up of people coming from all around the world, including from the US, including from Europe, right? And he noticed how so many of the videos he was watching, in terms of whether it was a training video or whatever, that there were these US Southern accents. And, you know, this is related to whether there are actually, you know, U.S. forces on the ground along with the IOF. But just talk about those two things, about how this isn't just Gaza. These atrocities are happening in the occupied West Bank as well. And if you have anything to say about the presence of, you know, we know from the situation a few years ago where you had a man from Brooklyn stealing a person's house saying, you know, if I don't steal it, someone else will. But now we don't want to discount that there are actual people who are Americans or people from Europe as part of these occupation forces committing these atrocities.
So a number I saw at the beginning of the war, I haven't confirmed this, but it was in a news article, was that there are 600,000 Americans in Israel. And, you know, we're talking overwhelmingly Zionists, Israeli Jews. So that's nearly 10% of the population. And that's not including all these Europeans as well. And I think that's, you know, a really important point. Let's not forget the West Bank, because there have been hundreds and hundreds of deaths in the West Bank at the hands of the Israeli forces and settlers, that there is this just massive ethnic cleansing and systematic violence that the state is enabling. You know, it's total brown shirt violence, you know, and you have a lot of these Jewish supremacists are basically neo-Nazis. And you have some of the leading Holocaust scholars in the world, one of them who is on Democracy Now! Said they're neo-Nazis. And they are, the Israeli occupation forces are engaging in all sorts of sexual violence. And it's important to emphasize a lot of the sexual violence is being directed at men. So everyone in the world has seen these photos of naked Palestinian, you know, or in their underwear, but they're also naked Palestinian men, you know, on the ground or being put on the buses who are being humiliated. This is also sexual violence. And the thing is, it's very important to confirm things. So I will just say the reports coming out of Al-Shifa Hospital, one of them was of rape. One of them was quickly discredited. The second one, when I saw it, I'm like, okay, this is a fabrication. The response to Israeli rape hoaxes is not for Palestinians to create rape hoaxes. And the reason it's a fabrication was it combined two different Israeli rape hoaxes, one of which was that an Israeli woman was raped in front of her relatives and they were forced to watch. We have to demand some sort of evidence. So that's why I've been focusing on direct testimony of Palestinian women who are saying, right, this happened to me and my family.
Now, and it could be that testimony will come out about that.
It could, but you know, when the stories get so outlandish like this, that's another reason not to believe them. Rape also doesn't typically happen in combat. It happens during occupation. And so in the case of the West Bank, one of the State Department officials who resigned, Josh Paul, he told this story that the State Department confirmed a 13-year-old Palestinian boy was raped, right? The Israelis rape young boys in the prisons.
No.
And they raised it with the Israelis. What the Israelis did is they went and the State Department got this report from a Palestinian human rights agency. The Israelis' response was to raid the offices of this human rights group, steal all their computers, all their data, shut them down and declare them a terrorist organization, right?
Right,
so
right,
there's all sorts of evidence that has come out over decades of rape of Palestinian women in the West Bank, rape of young boys and teenage boys in the prison, just systematic sexual violence against male Palestinian and female Palestinian detainees. So there's plenty of evidence that this is happening and it's systematic, but it's because it's an occupation force where they're the constant contact. And that's why I'm saying, like, you know, what the story of this Israeli woman, if you read it, it's got a lot of detail. It's very clear. It has corroborating sources. So that is entirely believable. But the October 7th stuff is a giant rape hoax, and Israel basically manufactured it. Officials, there's one official in Netanyahu's office who outright admitted this. So this organization, Zaka, completely shady, and we don't have time to get into it. Not just shady, but just the vilest organization you can imagine. Read my piece in The Intercept.
We will have time for us to mention your investigation into Zaka, because I think it's really important, but I just want to just pause for a minute. We're going to take a brief break. Stay with us. When they put it on me, I tell them this. I'm all about peace and love. Me a terrorist, like they don't know who the terrorist, insulting my intelligence. Oh, how these people judge.
Lumumba was democracy, Mossadegh was democracy, Allende was democracy. Hypocrisy, it bothers me. Call you terrorist if you don't want to be a colony. Refuse to bow down to a policy of robbery. It's terrorism, my lyrics. When more Vietnam vets killed themselves after the war than died in it, this is very basic. One nation in the world has over 1,000 military bases. They say it's religion when clearly it isn't. It's not just Muslims that oppose your imperialism. Is Hugo Chavez a Muslim? Nah, I didn't think so. Is Castro a Muslim? Nah, I didn't think so. It's like the definition didn't ever exist. I guess it's all just dependent who your nemesis is. Irrelevant how eloquent the rhetoric peddler is. They're telling fibs, now tell us who the terrorist is.
They're calling me a terrorist, like they don't know who the terrorist is. When they put it on me, I tell them this. I'm all about peace and love.
On the Ground is a totally listener-sponsored, supported show, and we are in need of your support. If you rely on the show, if you listen to the show, you come to look forward to what we are able to offer every week, please support us on Patreon at patreon.com/ontheground show. And you can also give on our website through PayPal or other means if you want to send a check. All that information is there. But please, please support us. I want to thank our supporters on Patreon so much. And for those who are already supporting, if you can tell a friend who you know would love to sign up, we need the support. Patreon.com/ontheground show or go to onthegroundshow.org. Thank you. This is On the Ground, Voices of Resistance from the Nation's Capital. I'm Esther Rivera. I'm in conversation with investigative journalist Arun Gupta. And we're talking about the rape, sexual abuse, and other targeting of Palestinian women and girls, and contrasting that with the unsubstantiated claims of attacks against Israeli women on October 7th, claims that have been used to justify genocide in Gaza, and particularly the targeting of women and girls in Gaza, including the ability of the population of Gaza to reproduce, which, as we know, was mentioned by the International Court of Justice as one of the reasons to continue the case of genocide against Israel. And so, Arun, you've had these three kind of mammoth important investigations recently into all these really horrific stories that we're talking about. And before we go to Zaka, I just wanted to make the point that when we're talking about the West Bank, that hundreds of people have been killed in the West Bank since October 7th, in addition to the tens of thousands dead in Gaza. And, you know, I just have to say this as an aside. I get really frustrated even at the official death count because I like to use the EuroMed figures because they're counting the people who are missing and, you know, have never, their bodies have never been allowed to be recovered. And I just think it's almost like a disservice or a disgrace or an erasure of them to not include them. And really the death toll is well over 40,000. You know,
yes, yes.
But I wanted to make the point that in the West Bank, we're talking about, in addition to hundreds being murdered, that thousands have been abducted. We've seen videos of young children. They're continuing to take young children. What is the excuse for abducting, going to a home at 3 a.m. and taking a 7-year-old boy? It's just, you know, with
it's
what we're talking
about.
Yeah. And there's evidence of young children being raped, boys, girls, and it's just so horrific. It's hard to even talk about it, like, you know, in a segment like this. So I just wanted to make that point about the abduction and the thousands that have been abducted since October 7th, in addition to the 5,000 that were there already. So for even when they released some of these Palestinian hostages, they had already abducted thousands more. So now I don't know what the latest figure is. I mean, the latest figure I heard was that it had doubled. So like maybe 10,000 Palestinians being detained. Most have not been charged with anything. But yeah, with the time we have left, yeah, talk about Zaka. I interviewed Max Blumenthal, and he's talked about this outrageous organization that's not really, they were called first responders on October 7th, but they're really not trained first responders, and they are the source of most of these atrocity hoaxes from that day.
The short story of Zaka is essentially rescue services in Israel are semi-privatized, and there a lot of them are affiliated with these ultra-Orthodox communities, so they're male only. Zaka is this search and rescue organization, and what they really do is they recover human remains. And the founder who set it up, Yehuda Meshi Zahav, in the 1990s, in 2021, he was slated to get the Israel Prize, which is the highest civilian honor in Israel. It's the equivalent of the Presidential Medal of Freedom in the United States. And that was too much for a lot of people, because basically he had spent the last 40 years raping boys, girls, and young women, and using Zaka for much of this time as cover, using their resources. And two of his brothers were also involved in it. And basically everyone, these ultra-Orthodox communities known as Haredi, are very insular, and they keep things internally. Like, you know, the worst thing to do is to go to outsiders. That's called, you're a Moser if you go to outsiders, right? And that's the worst thing in the world, even worse than someone raping children. And so everyone in the community knew. The rabbis, this is according to press reports, rabbis knew, Zaka knew, police had opened two different investigations back to the early 2000s. At one point, they had names of 14 different minors that he had raped, and they never did an investigation and closed the investigation. And in fact, the police unit that did the investigation of it, known as, I believe, Lahav 433, is now the one who's investigating the rapes on October 7th. And they actually don't have the capacity. They're not trained to investigate rapes. So
right.
Basically, he's slated to get this prize, and this is just too much for his victims. Suddenly, all these victims start coming forward who are now adults and talking in great detail about how he raped them. And so he rapes scores, perhaps hundreds of Israeli children and young women over this 30, 40 year period. There's just so many stories. One of the kids was like, he would show up in the neighborhood in his new car, and Zaka gave him a new car, and he would invite us inside. And this is a quote, and then he would get busy with us. This is not something we heard. We saw it and experienced it, right? So Zaka itself is responsible for far more rapes of Israelis than all the fabricated Israeli rape hoaxes combined. And,
wow.
And on top of that, Zaka was bankrupt on October 7th. After October 7th, Israel is the second most sophisticated military in the world after the United States. They have an entire unit, military unit, whose job is to go into mass casualty attacks to recover human remains and preserve evidence under fire. They were immediately mobilized, and they were told to stand down. Zaka was sent in instead. They completely botched the forensics. There was this incredible Haaretz investigative report, the Israeli newspaper, where they actually showed that Zaka volunteers, they have a photograph, they're on their phones making video fundraising calls with a corpse in a body bag in the background. They were using corpses as props. They have turned October 7th into this huge moneymaker. Meanwhile, they completely botched the forensics. They right. left all these human remains behind. They were mixing human remains. They were taking remains that were in Israeli military body bags and then putting them in their body bags so they could get the credit for it, and then losing and mixing pieces. So the forensics is completely central to Israeli rape claims. And Zaka was basically allowed to destroy. I don't think it was deliberate, because they're just incompetent, but they were allowed to destroy so much of the forensics. And now Israel and everyone is making these claims that have been amplified endlessly by Western media. oh, these men are religious and they have the most reverence for it. And they're out there. The New York Times actually said they're on a holy mission, you know, and meanwhile, they're just using it as this cynical cash grab to fill their coffers with all this money while they're destroying the forensic evidence and while their founder was responsible for scores, if not hundreds of Israeli children being raped.
You know, speaking of the forensics, is it also true, and I think I'm referencing part of my conversation with Max, he was talking about the scores of these vehicles that when journalists who have covered war, you know, have noted that, you know, these aren't cars burned by AK-47s. These are cars burned by Hellfire missiles. You know, so, you know, the beginning of the unraveling of the other hoax about October 7th, which is that Hamas had killed all these people when they could not have had this type of missile fire on these cars. But that these many of these cars are just going to be like compacted and crushed, like with the remains inside, and buried in a large pit. So I just think that that just ties to me what you're talking about in terms of this, of Zaka just really destroying and not really able to handle what could be evidence from the scenes.
Right. And so the final part of this story, and just quickly about what you said. So there's a really good Al Jazeera documentary that came out about a week ago. It's called, I believe, October 7th. You can find it on YouTube. They estimate close to 50 Israeli civilians were killed by the Israeli military on October 7th. And that's the low end. And from their report, it looks like could have been 100, maybe more were killed by Israel. And this is out of 695. So in other words, Israel may have accounted for 10 to 15% of Israeli deaths on October 7th itself.
Of the civilians, right.
Yeah.
Because I mean, you could look at the other numbers, too, in terms of the military, their own military strike on their own base at Erez Crossing. I mean, that gets us way beyond our subject right now.
So let me finish with this one point. So the reason Zaka is so important is, and the reason they're let in, it looks like there's basically this deal. They're let in to raise all this money. And in my Intercept report, I go through and we identify like millions and millions of dollars that they fundraise. Haaretz put it at $13 million as of 2 months ago. It looked like it was significantly higher, and they've raised considerably more since then. But the reason they were let in to do this and basically turn it into this cash grab with body bags is because they served a very valuable purpose. There's this Israeli consultant, a volunteer consultant in Netanyahu's office with the National Information Directorate. Basically, that's the Hasbara outfit in Netanyahu's, in the prime minister's office. And he explained how important Zaka was. The role that they played was that they were the ones, Zaka was the ones who convinced Western reporters that what we're dealing with is human monsters. And he said, this guy, Eitan Schwartz, that after October 7th, the entire state of Israel was fixed on framing the narrative that Hamas equals ISIS, right? And if you go back, all the Israeli officials are saying Hamas equals ISIS right after October 7th. Then a few days later, like October 10th or 11th, Biden is like, Hamas is ISIS. Then you hear the same from Antony Blinken. You hear the same from Lloyd Austin, Hamas is ISIS. And why are they fixed on this? Because ISIS is seen as this kind of like transcendental evil, right? It exists outside of history. It's as bad as the Nazis, if not worse. And it's so evil that they are not an equal combatant. Therefore, the entire world must spare no effort to exterminate them. And that means exterminating everyone around them. That was the entire strategy. And what this official goes on to say, that the generous and brave men of Zaka, they played this crucial role in convincing Western media that Hamas were human monsters, and quote, this deepened the legitimacy of the Israeli state to act with great force. And this is where
exactly.
is where the Hasbara comes in, that the role it serves. Now, Hasbara is translated as either explanation or public diplomacy, but what it is really this broad spectrum information warfare to advance the Israeli state's political, strategic, and military goals. It creates more space for their military operations. And so this great rape hoax has been used as cover for genocide. It's been used to erase the sexual and gender violence against Palestinian women. It's been used to keep Israeli society in this heightened state of aggression and just rage and, you know, complete hysteria.
Insanity, right? Yeah. And I think you even mentioned how it had been used to silence women's organizations at the United Nations who were documenting the attacks on Palestinian women. Well, I'm going to have to wrap it up. And I think that what you ended on is really the key here, because all of this propaganda has been used to try to justify the genocide in Gaza and to justify or to erase the humanity of Palestinian girls and women who are being subjected to the very thing that they are accusing Hamas of. And I think you also made an interesting analogy to even if the exact atrocity of rape as a war crime is not happening, the degradation of society, like the way the U.S. destroyed Iraq, leads to human trafficking and other types of degradation of women beyond the present moment. Mm-hmm. And exactly.
May I make one more quick point?
Yes.
So the Israeli rape hoax is in a big historical sense, is the same exact thing as the Jim Crow era rape hoaxes. The Tulsa race massacre started with a rape hoax. The Rosewood massacre started with a rape hoax. The Scottsboro Boys was a rape hoax. Emmett Till was killed because a white woman who at the end of her life admitted she made up a story that he sexually harassed her, right? So this is not actually, this is a problematic nature of believe all women, right? You have to still look at the context. And rape hoaxes are used by colonizers to cover up their sexual crimes. And what it is they are basically from the Native American genocide to Jim Crow to the Iraq War, they have this narrative that the savage hordes are threatening to defile the purity of white women, therefore we need to exterminate the savage hordes. And that is exactly what's going on in Israel and Gaza today.
Right. Well, that is the perfect note to end this. I've been speaking to investigative reporter Arun Gupta, and tell our listeners how they can follow your work. And I know you have a book coming out.
Yeah. So you can follow my work on Twitter. My handle is at Arun Indy, ARUNINDY. I'm also on Substack. I'm easy to find. The name of my Substack is Life, the Universe, and Most Things. And I'm currently working on a book on a completely different subject about history of American cuisine and how it's transformed food and agriculture and cuisines around the world. It's called Apocalypse Chow, and it's going to be published in 2 years by the New Press. So keep an eye out for that.
All right. We certainly will. And so thank you for joining me today, Arun.
Thank you so much, Esther. Terrorism. Every prince, black war, was terrorism.
terrorism. Every day, USA, that is terrorism.
This is On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org, Voices of Resistance from the Nation's Capital. I'm Esther Averam. Well, on March 26, 2024, during the session of the United Nations Human Rights Council, the UN Special Rapporteur on the situation of human rights in the Palestinian territories occupied since 1967 gave a report about conditions. This is Francesca Albanese speaking in Geneva.
Excellencies, it is with the heaviest heart that I appear before you today to deliver my fourth report as the Special Rapporteur on the Occupied Palestinian Territory. Following nearly 6 months of unrelenting Israeli assault on occupied Gaza, it is my solemn duty to report on the worst of what humanity is capable of and to present my finding, the anatomy of a genocide. History teaches us that genocide is a process, not a single act. It starts with the dehumanization of a group as other and the denial of that group's humanity, and ends with the destruction of the group in whole or in part. The dehumanization of Palestinians as a group is the hallmark of their history of ethnic cleansing, dispossession, and apartheid. In the words of Edward Said, Palestinians were made orphans of a homeland by the creation of the State of Israel and its continuous policies, intended to erase their presence from their land. Genocide is defined in international law as specific sets of acts committed with intent to destroy in whole or in part a national, ethnical, racial, or religious group as such. It is often referred to as the crime of crimes, due to its complexity and because of the challenge of proving the specific intent, as the Convention requires. And yet, this complexity is not about the creation of a hierarchy among atrocity crimes. It's rather a reflection of a different nature and scale. The heightened threshold for intent, namely to destroy a group as prescribed by Article 2 of the Genocide Convention, must be proven directly or inferred from facts which admit of no other reasonable inference. But when genocidal intent is so conspicuous, so ostentatious as it is in Gaza, we cannot avert our eyes. We must confront genocide. We must prevent it, and we must punish it. The catastrophic situation I investigated is known, as it has been broadcast to the world in real time by its victims. Astoundingly, rather than halting its momentum, a minority of powerful member states have provided military, economic, and political support for the atrocity, compounding the devastation it has wrought for the Palestinians. In this assault, the sixth and most egregious in 16 years, Israel has killed more than 30,000 Palestinians, including 13,000 children, more than the children killed in all conflicts worldwide in four previous years. Journalists, doctors, nurses, artists, academics, engineers, scientists, and their family members, a whole society has been targeted. A further 12,000 Palestinians are reported missing, most presumed dead. Some 71,000 are injured, most with life-changing wounds, made worse by the decimation of the healthcare system and overwhelming unsanitary conditions created in Gaza. In the first 2 weeks, Israel prevented all humanitarian aid from entering Gaza, and in the ensuing months, it has imposed extreme restrictions of water, food, electricity, and fuel. Israel has blocked the entry of medical supplies, including anesthetics, incubators, and even baby formula. Convoys have hardly reached northern Gaza. The deliberate policy has induced rapid and sustained severe food insecurity in the entire population, with those trapped in the north forced to eat animal feed and grass. The occupying power has also undermined UNRWA, the main lifeline to Palestinians in Gaza. Growing numbers of Palestinians are dying of starvation as we speak, and the hostages and their families have also not escaped these devastating circumstances. The collective scars of those who survive are certain to last generations. In the initial weeks of the assault, Israeli forces killed around 250 Palestinians daily through an apocalyptic arsenal of weaponry on one of the most densely populated places on Earth. 25,000 tons of explosives, equivalent to two nuclear bombs, unguided munitions, and hundreds of 2,000-pound bunker busters were used to level entire neighborhoods. The ground offensive changed the pattern, but not the scale of destruction. In less than 6 months, Israel has destroyed Gaza, erasing or severely damaging almost all civilian infrastructure and agricultural land, most of homes, healthcare facilities, telecommunication infrastructure, every university, most educational facilities, municipal services, mosques and churches, and innumerable cultural heritage sites, which are integral to the social fabric of Palestine. Israeli soldiers have published footage boasting about their killing of families, mothers, children, the bombing of homes, mosques, and schools. Self-incriminating videos show them sadistically mocking and humiliating their Palestinian victims, not only by violating their physical integrity and right to life, but also their dignity, their most intimate possessions and spaces that the soldiers have entered and looted, and by desecrating cemeteries and places of worship. When the ground offensive started, the number of daily casualties seemed to reduce, but in fact, the level of atrocities increased. Mass disappearance and arbitrary detentions, widespread and systematic torture and inhumane treatment add to the experience of endless death and loss. Desperate people had to search through rubble with their bare hands. Many have been unable to bury and grieve loved ones. These acts of genocide have been motivated by vehement anti-Palestinian discourse, which characterizes the entire Palestinian people in Gaza as enemies to be eradicated or forcibly removed. This rhetoric has been pervasive across all segments of Israeli society. That Israeli high-ranking officials with command authority routinely called on soldiers to annihilate the people of Gaza is compelling evidence of explicit and public incitement to commit genocide. Evidence further indicates that this genocidal incitement has been internalized and acted upon by soldiers on the ground. One of my key findings is that Israel's executive and military leadership and soldiers have intentionally distorted rules of international humanitarian law, distinction, proportionality, and precaution in an attempt to legitimize genocidal violence against the Palestinian people by deliberately stretching the definitions of human shield, evacuation orders, warnings, safe zones, collateral damage, and medical protection. Israel has used their protective function as humanitarian camouflage, with the effect of concealing patterns of conduct from which the only inference can reasonably be drawn is a state policy of genocidal violence against the Palestinians. Blurring the distinction between protected civilians or civilian infrastructure and combatants or legitimate military targets, Israel has effectively characterized the whole civilian population in Gaza as human shields or terrorist accomplices as a matter of legal policy. Those who managed to evacuate to areas that Israel defined as safe humanitarian zones have been met with further attacks, their deaths and injuries justified as collateral damage. By making repeated claims which have been systematically discredited that Hamas used hospitals as operation centers, Israel appears to be operating on the premise that if you tell a lie long enough, people will believe it. Israel has used the camouflage of humanitarian law to characterize the entire Palestinian people and life-sustaining and life-saving infrastructure of Gaza as targetable, killable, destroyable. Israel has attempted to legitimize, for example, the devastations of Gaza's medical infrastructure, which has led to potentially thousands of additional deaths, life-changing injuries, and trauma. IHL has thus been distorted to justify a war of annihilation. In light of this, I find that there are reasonable grounds to believe that the threshold indicating the commission of the crime of genocide against Palestinians as a group in Gaza has been met. Specifically, Israel has committed three acts of genocide with the requisite intent. causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part, and imposing measures intended to prevent birth within the group. The genocide in Gaza is the most extreme stage of a long-standing settler colonial process of erasure of the native Palestinians. For over 76 years, this process has oppressed the Palestinians as a people in every way imaginable, crushing their inalienable right to self-determination demographically, economically, territorially, culturally, and politically. Israel has attempted to displace them, expropriate their land and other resources, and ultimately replace them. The colonial amnesia of the West has condoned Israel's colonial settler project from the violent history of the very birth of the State of Israel to its oppressive occupation since 1967, the crippling closure of Gaza since 1993, and its military assaults on Gaza since 2007. The world now sees the bitter fruit of the impunity afforded to Israel. This was a tragedy foretold. While the International Court of Justice will have to deliberate, the International Criminal Court will have to investigate, it is my responsibility to remind you that the Genocide Convention includes a jus cogens norm and erga omnes obligation to prevent the commission of genocide, a reality the International Court of Justice recognized as plausible exactly 2 months ago. The time for states to act was then, and as they did not, the time is now. In this darkest hour, the international community cannot continue to ignore that it's Israel's project to rid Palestine of Palestinians in defiance of international law and the world's failure to call Israel to account that has led to genocide laid bare in Gaza. Denial of the reality and the continuation of Israel's impunity and exceptionalism is no longer viable. Especially in light of yesterday's binding Security Council resolution, I implore member states to abide by their obligations, which start with imposing an arms embargo and sanctions on Israel, and so ensure that the future does not continue to repeat itself. Thank you.
And Francesca Albanese, Special Rapporteur on the Situation of Human Rights in the Palestinian Territories, occupied since 1967, will have the last word on today's show. She delivered her report on March 26, 2024 in Geneva, one day after the UN Security Council voted for a ceasefire in Gaza, which Israel ignored, upending all claims that it adheres to international law. This is On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org, voices of resistance from the nation's capital. We're on 24 stations on the Pacifica Radio Network, on all your podcast platforms at On the Ground with Esther Avaram, and on our website, onthegroundshow.org. In addition to communicating with us on our website, you can let us know you like the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Patreon.com at On the Ground Show, or I'll also link to every show on my Instagram page, which is Esther_Avaram. That's Esther_I, V like Victor, Erem like Mary. The Free Palestine Movement is continuing with actions. March 30th is Land Day, when thousands across the globe will march to support Palestinian resistance against settler colonialism and affirm the right of return for all Palestinians to their sovereign homeland. In D.C., the Saturday, March 30th Land Day rally will be at DuPont Circle at 4 p.m. Get more information at shutitdownforpalestine.org and at answercoalition.org. The music we played this hour included Run by Killer Mike, Leve Palestina from the Palestinian-Swedish band Kofia, Terrorist by Low Key, and our theme music for the show is Voodoo Child by Jimi Hendrix. I'm Esther Avaram. Until next time, take good care and keep raising your voice. Peace. On the Ground is a totally listener-sponsored, supported show, and we are in need of your support. If you rely on the show, if you listen to the show, you come to look forward to what we are able to offer every week, please support us on Patreon at patreon.com patreon.com/ontheground show. And you can also give on our website through PayPal or other means if you want to send a check. All that information is there. But please, please support us. I want to thank our supporters on Patreon so much. And for those who are already supporting, if you can tell a friend who you know would love to sign up, we need the support. Patreon.com/ontheground show or go to onthegroundshow.org. Thank you.